Beach season is here, but how much sand is on your favorite beach? In some cases, not quite enough. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. This past spring, Pinellas County State Senator Jack Latvella and Representative Kathleen Peters sponsored bills aimed at saving the state's beaches from continued erosion. The plan calls for a three-year work plan and would dedicate a minimum of $50 million a year for the effort. Let's say hello to our guest, Kathleen Peters, here. Since 2012, has served in District 69, which stretches from Reddington Shores to St. Pete Beach. Welcome to Florida Matters.
It's good to be here.
Robin Soley is the CEO of Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber of Commerce. Its mission is to promote tourism and businesses along the Pinellas Coast. Great to see you.
Good morning.
Andy Squires is a coastal resources manager for Pinellas County and oversees renourishment projects. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Ryan Mills is a reporter for the Naples Daily News, who, along with Eric Statz, produced a four-part series last fall called Shrinking Shores. The premise is that Florida loses more of its beaches every year. That series got the attention of Senator Latvella. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Kathleen Peters, you are the House sponsor of a bill that calls on at least $50 million for beach funding. Pinellas Republican Jack Latvella sponsored the Senate companion. Is this, to you, a tourism-related measure or an environmental measure or both?
For me, it plays out threefold. It's environmental, absolutely, which I think is actually critical to ensure that our environment is protected. It's a tourism issue, and because we know our beaches are probably the number one marketing thing we have for the state of Florida. But it's more than that. It's an infrastructure issue. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't keep our beaches nourished appropriately, just like on the east coast of Florida, when Matthew came in, not only did we lose the infrastructure of roads, but we lost the infrastructure of telecommunications, power lines, many different things that are important to our quality of life and our day-to-day doing business. And so if we don't protect that infrastructure, it's an economic issue. Just like on the East Coast, when they lost the roads and lost all the infrastructure, the citizens already invested in that infrastructure. And because we didn't protect it, they now are having to pay to reinvest in that same infrastructure. And if we don't protect it again, they're going to continue in that cycle of rebuilding that same road, re-putting in all that infrastructure and telecommunication lines. So we need to do a better job of protecting that infrastructure so that we get a better return on it.
Robin Soley, the Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber, this is a tourism-related issue for you, right?
Absolutely. Kathleen hit the nail on the head. Our organization, our motto is Protector of the Beaches. And that goes not only from an environment standpoint, but protecting everything that the beaches represent. And that is an economic impact. People come to our destination, they stay in a hotel, they walk the beach, they spend money in our restaurants. We can't, as a community, continue to support our small businesses alone. We need outside visitors to do that.
Andy Squires, when a beach is renourished, what does that mean exactly?
Well, it means that we be able to supplement the natural sand that's on the beach and drifts away and erodes away with usually offshore sand, and it allows us to place that sand on the beach and basically maintain and protect the infrastructure, protects the upland property owners, and like she said, it has a huge economic impact. I want to give you some numbers because, you know, we get about 10% of the tourist development tax, the bed tax money that goes to beach nourishment. And that right now is about $3.5 million a year. But Pinellas County hired a statistician, Research Data Services, Inc. in 2015 to do an economic evaluation of what they call beachers. They look at about 72% of the tourists in Pinellas are coming because of the beaches. And of that, they looked at what they call beacher visitor spending per year, $2.3 billion. That's what they're bringing back. The total economic impact, $4.6 billion. Job supported, 47,000. So it's huge. It's a huge benefit.
That was 2015 study.
Yes.
And those numbers just last week, you know, were over 100,000 jobs in Pinellas County now in 2017 with tourism.
Now, Pinellas County beaches, you're looking out for those. Now, there are beaches all over the state, of course. You know, Florida is surrounded pretty much.
Yes.
Not every beach can get help every single time. What beaches typically get priority, and how does that process work out?
That's a very complicated, for state funding, basically, it's through a ranking process, and there's several criteria they use to rank the beaches. That goes through a process. That ranking the state uses goes to the legislature, and they consider those when they try to evaluate the budget for the following year. Really, for Pinellas County, we count heavily on federal funding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mainly through talking with our congressmen, making them aware of what our needs are, and hopefully they provide the funding to the Army Corps of Engineers. And we've been very good with that over the last 20-plus years.
Can I interrupt
Yes.
on that? Yeah, there's a ranking. And the problem with, and I think a reason why a lot of beaches didn't get funded and had the damage that they had and lost so much infrastructure, is because sometimes those projects, even though they're ranked, and you might be in those top ranking, depending on who has more influence in the legislature, those projects sometimes will rise up even when they weren't highly ranked. And I think that was a flaw in how we were doing it before, and that's why the new legislation that changed that ranking, I think, would have been better. And I think if we did a three-year plan, which is what the legislation said, had it passed, then just like DOT has a five-year plan and the local governments know how to save the money and protect for the money, and we can better plan with the federal government that we're in the three-year plan, it's coming up in 2 years, we have to have the money put aside. Mm-hmm. It's a better way to plan. It's much more effective and efficient. And with the new criteria, then because there are different weights on that and economy is in there, I think that would have been a much better process. I think it would have taken away the weight of a more powerful legislator coming in saying, my community is more important than yours, and so we're going to get it, and you can get it next year. And I had the experience of a project on St. Pete Beach that only – it was ranked 25th. And they only funded 24 projects. Well, somehow my 25th went down to 50, and they promised me the next year that it would be first on the list, and of course it wasn't.
All right, Ryan Mills of the Naples Daily News, you have reported some beaches in Florida are losing up to 18 feet a year. Did I read that right?
That is in Cape San Blas up in the Panhandle. It's the fastest eroding beach in the state, at least the beach that's developed. I mean, yeah, it's moving fast. We were up there two or three times over the last year, and it's pretty impressive the erosion that's happened there.
18 feet. And Minnesota Key, closer to home, also having trouble.
Yeah, and you know, that's an interesting one. There's 411 miles of beach in Florida that are what the DEP calls critically eroded. And Minnesota Key, which is between Charlotte and Sarasota counties, is part of that. Now, that stretch of beach has never received any sort of state help. Even though the state recognizes it as being critically eroded, that beach has never received any sort of state money. And part of that is because of public access and things like that. But they had trouble after the first tropical storm last year, Colin. When Colin came by, their beach washed away, even though it was, you know, hundreds of miles away from them.
And we've changed the shoreline a lot, of course, over the course of time. We've added ports, inlets, jetties. How do man-made structures affect what nature is supposed to do?
There's a natural flow of sand in Florida. And generally, if you're talking the East Coast and West Coast of Florida, the sand flows south. When we start carving inlets into the coast, they catch sand. The sand falls into those inlets and gets caught there, and it deprives the sand from flowing south. And then jetties, things like that, that stick out, they trap sand. They're there to keep the sand in place. But again, that prevents the sand from flowing south, so it causes erosion, downdrift of inlets and jetties. So that's what you see typically at those places.
Kathleen Peters, some of the controversy over beach renourishment is where do you get the sand? In Sarasota County earlier this year, residents of Lido Key and Siesta Key are divided over taking sand from Big Pass to renourish Lido beaches. Siesta Key residents are not happy with this. City and county leaders have struggled to figure this one out. Now, you're hoping to be a Pinellas commissioner. How would you solve something like this?
Well, we're kind of going through the same thing with Shell Key. Shell Key is filled up, and a lot of the philosophy is if Mother Nature moves it, then Mother Nature intends it to be there, and it's natural occurring. But the residents of Tierra Verde have said that wasn't naturally occurring because unnaturally we have been renourishing Paso Grill, and that sand is moving south from what we have put on Paso Grill, and it is clogging up and closing up Shell Key. So their argument is it's not naturally occurring. And so they've had some issues with flow through and not being able for the water to clear through. And when the white pelicans come, some residents can't even be out in their backyard because it doesn't get flushed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a problem. You know, quite honestly, in that legislation, the coastal management legislation, we put in inlet management. And although that doesn't really address maybe the west coast of Florida so much, because we can dredge out in the Gulf, sand is not as difficult to acquire on the west coast of Florida as it is on the east coast of Florida. And what was in that coastal management bill also did inlet. And I think this is important because on the Atlantic side, they can't go out and dredge. The Atlantic's too deep. There's such a shortage of sand. And what that allowed for is as those inlets fill in, we could put sand traps prior to those. So let's say it's one of the ports, either Fort Lauderdale or Cape Canaveral or something like that. Fort Lauderdale's inlet, we have to keep dredging to keep those ships, and we've made it bigger so more Panamax ships can get in there. But when that fills in and we have to keep dredging, it's very expensive, and then all that sand has been lost off the coast and some other beach areas, and we can't protect their infrastructure. So if we put sand traps prior to that inlet and catch that sand, that gives us the ability to take the sand that came off of that beach and put it right back on the same beach it came from. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good management plan. I think it's good for the environment. You're using the same sand, and it's much more cost effective because you can't go out in the Atlantic. It's too deep. It's too difficult to dredge. And there is a real sand crisis on the east coast of Florida.
I understand the Atlantic is getting too close to Kennedy Space Center. That could be a real big problem years to come.
Well, the whole East Coast is problematic with their sand.
Kennedy Space Center, to be fair, it's still got a ways to go before it's going to overtake the launch pads.
Okay. Maybe by the time we're ready to go to Mars.
Exactly.
Andy Squires, you've estimated Pinellas County has, over the past decade, spent $100 million to re-nourish the beaches. How long can this keep going?
Well, that $100 million isn't really what Pinellas County alone spent. That's a combination of federal
money,
state.
That's how much has been spent.
Yeah, on average. Yeah. It fluctuates a lot because we mm-hmm. have a big project, then we go a few years without spending a lot of money. But that's really a matter of politics, really, and what the priority is going to be. And so far, we've been able to keep these beaches well-funded for 20-plus years with those federal, state, and local funds. Who knows how long that will last? Priorities will probably change. But right now, we've been doing well with this. And I don't see anything changing in the near term in terms of keeping that going.
And Robin Soley, we've talked about the funding here, federal, state, local. What about tourism, bed taxes? I mean, it's all a mix, right?
That's an important message. You know, that's not taxpayer money from a local level. It's our tourist development tax. Part of that 6% that's collected is spent in that capacity. So again, we're reinvesting in our local destination to make it not only have great infrastructure for the residents that live there, but also an attractive destination for our tourists to visit. For every dollar that we spend on it, we get $6 back with visitor spending in our local economy.
Ryan Mills, what is the biggest threat to Florida's beaches? Is it developments or tropical weather, or is it just, you know, the natural cycle? You know, sand comes and goes naturally.
I think development is a huge part of it. I mean, one of the things we kind of went into our project with the assumption was that Florida is all in when it comes to development. And we found that. We looked at the data and it showed that it's very, very rare for the DEP to turn down a request to develop on the shore. Now, they may request some modifications, things like that, but you can develop along the coast. So development is definitely an issue. We're developing on the side of a sandbar that is receding in. I mean, we're on a coast that is receding, and we're developing on it. So I think that's your biggest issue right now. I mean, it's one of those things that we're all in, and there's not a whole lot we can do other than move all of our infrastructure back. So it's either build your beaches or deal with the consequences.
I'd like to add, you know, it's important to talk about sea level rising as a part of that, and communities need to plan for that. We have storms and natural erosion that's happening. But from a development standpoint and having local communities plan for the future of that development and changing the way we develop with sea level rising in the back of that mind and those variances and ordinances and DEP and county and state government, that's hugely important as we talk about nourishment as well.
And Andy Squires, you're nodding your head in approval.
Well, I might add that, you know, obviously with all the development in Pinellas County and our Barrier Islands, you know, if we hadn't developed them, then those islands would naturally, the geological cycles, they'd move around. They'd move. They'd migrate. But we don't want them to migrate because of the roads and structures. But one thing we have done at Pinellas is some of our undeveloped islands, like Fort DeSoto, Bullet Key, we had an issue a few years ago where the North Beach eroded after Tropical Storm Debby in 2012. And I got with the park director there and said, you know, they wanted to re-nourish that beach. And I said, well, you know, maybe we ought to take a look at this and maybe work around Mother Nature. You have a lot of beach area, Fort DeSoto. Let's let these natural processes go through. Let's not throw a lot of money at this because we need to kind of get out of the way of Mother Nature because there isn't a huge development there. And so we are kind of working with Mother Nature there, not force and nourishment project at that area.
Back in the 1970s, Florida passed a law that no new development could take place within 50 feet of the high tide mark. Now, what is it now? It's kind of eased off quite a bit since then. I'm getting a head shake from Robin Soley here.
I mean, with a high water mark conversation at St. Pete Beach is a great example that that debate is going on month over month, year over year, because it moves. And, you know, hoteliers want as much as they can to develop. Residents don't want it impeding. Yeah. And so that is a very controversial topic and I would say very complicated.
My guests are Treasure Island Republican Representative Kathleen Peters, Robin Soley with the Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber of Commerce, Andy Squires with Pinellas County's Coastal Resources, and Ryan Mills with the Naples Daily News. We're talking beach renourishment. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters, and we are talking beach renourishment with my guest, Treasure Island Republican Kathleen Peters, Robin Soley with the Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber of Commerce, Andy Squires with Pinellas County Coastal Resources, and Ryan Mills with the Naples Daily News. Kathleen Peters, you and Senator Latvala, the measure dedicates $50 million at least a year toward beach renourishment and inland management. The money would come from the Land Acquisition Trust Funds, right? So it's not new or additional revenue. It's just being moved from one place to another. What projects would it take away from?
In all the years that I've been in the legislature, we've never spent more than $30 million on beach renourishment. And sometimes we've fallen short on that. And so I think $50 million is something that we should strive for every year. The land acquisition, you know, on the Constitution Amendment, when they did that, there's some clarity. And I think this year we won't be buying land. But we also are in charge of maintaining the land that we have. And I think that what the budget does this year does a really good job at looking at how we can maintain, clean up, and ensure a healthy environment of our lakes, our springs, the coastline, the beaches. And I'm really proud of this budget this year. We've done a lot of land purchasing that maybe didn't come out of that trust fund before. You know, so we buy land that surrounds all the military bases. That's good environmental land, that's coastal land, particularly in the panhandle. And so we've bought some land that didn't come out of that trust fund. So I think Florida's done a really good job at buying land, but we also have to maintain it. And that's really why we took it out of that trust fund. But I'm okay with doing that because it's going to really clean up and keep those springs, the lakes that have disappeared. We're going to start making all that right.
So the dock stamp revenue back to Amendment 1,
right.
One-third of that, I mean, it comes from every county, right? Every real estate transaction in the state is assessed that one-third dedicated to the land and water renourishment. Is it fair to somebody in, say, Polk County or Hardee County to use their taxes to help the Minnesota Beach Club, for instance?
I would say yes, and the reason why is because all that income that comes in from tourism, wherever it comes from, it benefits everybody in the state of Florida. Everybody in the state of Florida. So I'm going to give you an example on how when tourism hurts, right, it's the number one economic driver we have in the state. Mm-hmm. And we had the experience, the unfortunate experience, when the BP oil spill, the Horizon, we got oil on our beaches, right? The news reported that there was oil on Florida's beaches. Now, we all know that there was not very much oil on Florida's beaches, and it was very isolated to the panhandle, to a few communities. But we lost conventions, weddings, tourism, vacations in across the entire state. So, yes, absolutely. If we protect our beaches and we market tourism, it benefits the people in the rural community. It benefits everybody because those sales tax dollars that the tourists are spending on the beach also benefit people in the inland areas of the state.
Ryan Mills, what about the critics who say beach renourishment just never really works? I mean, you can restore a beach, but then along comes a Hurricane Matthew, and it's all gone.
And there are plenty of those. I mean, and I've spoken with some of them, including some of the more prominent coastal scientists in the country, and they say the real solution isn't beach nourishment. The real solution is to retreat from the beach whenever you can and wherever you can. That's a hard thing to tell someone in Flagler County, for instance. Flagler County was one of the hardest hit counties by Hurricane Matthew last year, and they'd never renourished their beaches, and they got hit hard because of that. So, yeah, you can look at it and say that sand is going to wash away, but is it more economical to have the sand wash away and protect your buildings or to not put the sand there in the first place and lose your roads and lose your buildings, which is what happened in Flagler County. They lost about a mile stretch of A1A in Flagler County, got ripped up by Hurricane Matthew.
Andy Swires, I know there's not one single formula for this, but when a beach is renourished, how long does it last?
Right. And, you know, nourishment's a long-term commitment because mm-hmm. we know the sand erodes through time, depending on where. For Pinellas County, some of them we have to nourish every 3 or 4 years. There's some hot spots that, you know, I've seen 30 feet go away in one night in St. Pete Beach, the north end of St. Pete Beach. And then there's another beaches like Paso Grill, the south end of St. Pete Beach. That's about a 10-year interval. Of course, any storm could throw that off kilter. An episodal event like a hurricane could change everything.
Robin Sully, some environmentalists say Sugar White Sand beaches are great for tourism, for business, but nesting sea turtles may not think too highly of it. How can tourism and the environment coexist on our most popular beaches?
We do a great job at coexisting in Pinellas County with tourism and our environment, and I'm proud about Pinellas County and how well we educate our visitors to coexist in the sea turtle nesting, fencing them off. Our organization actually creates educational pieces that we distribute to our hotel partners so that upon check-in, those tourists will now understand how they can coexist in that environment.
I just wanted to mention something about the turtles. We have some great photographs after Hurricane Elena held off our coast back in 1985. We have several pictures down the coast that we've taken when there's basically no sand, just a seawall and no beach in many places. And we've actually taken photographs at the exact same locations recently. And it's eye-opening of what the beaches look like then and now after 20-plus, 30 years of nourishment. Nesting sea turtles would not have a place to nest if it wasn't for a lot of the nourishment projects we have. And I will say that Pinellas County is very supportive of this. We contract with Clearwater Marine Aquarium every year to monitor the turtle nesting season. It's a lot of work. Every day, early in the morning, they mark those nests, and it's a great service.
Kathleen Peters, real quickly, when there is a big disaster, say it was Elena back in 85 or, you know, some of the more recent storms, when it's to that degree, can the state of Florida or a local area depend more on the federal government for beach restoration?
Well, you know, historically we've been able to, and Congressman Young was a big player in making sure that Pinellas County was always taken care of, especially after Elena. But does that play in the future? That's a good question because it just depends on, first, the administration. We experienced in the last several years when we needed FEMA to come in and help us, FEMA didn't come. And so this year, if we need help, will the federal administration, will that current administration be there for us? Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to think that they will be. But it's not something that we can depend on every single year because it's going to depend on who our congressman is and our senators and if they're going to step up to the plate and make sure that we have it like Congressman Young always did.
Andy Swires.
And I can say that just recently we had Hermine hit the west coast of Florida, and we actually ended up getting $12.8 million of federal funds to support this upcoming Sankey project. So they're still helping. I mean, it still works.
The funds are directly linked to?
Yes, Hermine, Hurricane Hermine. Uh-huh. It was emergency funding through the federal government.
Robin Sully, what Pinellas County beaches get the most complaints from residents?
Unfortunately for us in St. Pete Beach, you know, we have three different varieties of type of beach, and one of them is called Upham Beach. It's been under, and Andy can speak more adequately, through the T-Groin project, but our visitors come in and comment about that beach all the time.
Yeah, Andy, do you hear many complaints? You mentioned a few of them. In fact, Honeymoon Island, I wonder how many residents complain about the rocks.
Right, let me address both of those. Yeah, Honeymoon Island, definitely the rocks on that beach have been a big issue. They were dug off from offshore many years ago, and someone trying to build up that island. And so it's very difficult to remove them, but we have renourished that a couple of years ago now and built some of these T-groin structures there that seem to be holding the sand very well in the north end of the beach there. So that's been very successful. Going down to Upham Beach in the north end of St. Pete Beach, that one's up there because I said I saw 30 feet go away one night one time. We've got permits finally after 20 years of work to install rock structures to help hold that beach. It'll save us money in the long term. And one thing else about Upham Beach, we do use Bunce's Pass, which is the inlet just to the north, for sand source every 6 to 10 years. And that sand, though, is coarser. And that's really good from a coastal geology standpoint because it doesn't drift away as quickly, but people don't like it. So when we did Nourish back in 2010, she probably got the complaints. We got some, too, because they didn't like it, but it lasts longer.
Right.
But that nice sugary sand, everybody loves it, but it goes away much quicker.
And I'm going to inject there because that is the project, the tea growing project, that was number 25 on the list that got bumped.
25.
And it got bumped, so it took me more years to get that done, but I'm really proud that we were finally able to get the state funding because, you know, I had a business right in front of Upham Beach, and every single year we put it in. It looked like we had this gorgeous beach, and one storm would come in, and it was gone. I mean, absolutely gone. Overnight, it would seem like it was gone. So I think it's absolutely critical that tea growing project get finished, and I think it's going to be a solution to that beach problem.
All right, the fiscal year begins July 1st. Assuming Governor Scott signs the budget and doesn't take away the beach restoration funds, Kathleen Peters, where will we see that money first in action?
Well, that's going to depend on each community and how quickly they expedite bringing down those dollars and getting the projects moving. So we do the funding for it, but then it's up to the local government and who's ever in charge of stepping up. DEP has really, in the last 3 to 4 years, I really noticed that they've kind of gotten out of the way. They've stepped back and not been so prohibitive on expediting projects. I think anytime I've called them when a project would get stalled, they did everything in their power to help expedite it to get projects moving so that we could use this money and get these projects done quickly. We can get people hired and fill those positions that are needed to ensure that it's done and expedited and the contracts are done.
All right, Ryan Mills, finally, beyond getting the attention of lawmakers, which your series certainly did, what is the takeaway from your series on Florida's shrinking shores?
I think the takeaway is that it really shows the importance of our beaches, to how it's more than just a tourist spot. I mean, they're important for protecting us from storms. They're just a hugely important part of Florida. They are Florida's number one piece of its brand. And over the years, we have not done as much as we probably should have to protect them. And I think that there's efforts being made by your guest here today to make a stand and to try to help more than we have.
Ryan Mills, the Naples Daily News. Andy Squires with Pinellas County Coastal Resources, Robin Soley with Tampa Bay Beach's Chamber of Commerce, and Treasure Island Republican Kathleen Peters. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And there is more on the effort to keep Florida's beaches postcard ready at WUSFnews.org. We have included a link to Ryan Mills and Eric Stats' four-part series, Shrinking Shores, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on it all on Facebook or via email at floridamatters@wusf.org. Our show is produced by Stephanie Colombini, our engineer Craig George, and Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.